4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
I think I mentioned to you I spoke to Dr. Watson already.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really a few things that came up there, and I was curious about your opinions on it. First of all, the Atlanta School Compromise of 1973. What was your opinion about that?
Well, the compromise and all of those matters were determined prior to my coming. It's not so much that I had an opinion one way or the other, as much as having a responsibility to implement that program, and with myself being part of it. And I really felt it to be a relatively mild requirement as it relates to desegregation, because at that point we had approximately 84% black and only about 16% white. The teacher shifting had already taken place, and the only real requirements of the compromise was that we have a parity of administrators and that we implement a voluntary transfer program, so that those measures really were relatively mild in comparison to some of the requirements imposed upon other school systems.
Did you feel when you took over in 73 that it was by this time too late to achieve any racial balance in the school system, at least through busing, for example?
We achieved, in my opinion, the optimum level of desegregation. And I think many observers would agree that shortly following that is that we moved not only from desegregation, but to a considerable degree of integration as to how effectively that the youngsters got along with one another. Observers of desegregation stated that whenever you would reach the point of a 70-30 ratio, that the whites would just arbitrarily leave. Well, in the several schools which we have, and notably the high schools, our ratio is about 50-50, and we have been able to sustain that at those levels through most of the years.
Dr. Lesson, as a matter of fact, did talk about a racial tipping point. And that was actually one of the main points that he was stressing when he spoke to me. And, for example, he was saying that basically the neglect of the black students earlier in regard to 50s, 60s, and 40s, in regard to curriculum and in regard to overcrowding, made successful integration possible. There were so many black schools that were overcrowded and on double sessions that to alleviate this fully would have meant going beyond the racial tipping points in all the white majority schools, and that would, in a sense, desegregation would have been overwhelmed by the basic fact that tipping points couldn't be hit. Do you feel at all that desegregation, in a sense, was doomed based on how blacks had been treated in the system prior to 54 and also during the late 50s and 60s?
I attribute the major concerns that we've had with desegregation as it relates to community attitude, city after city, that we've seen the resegregation. It was not, in my opinion, attributable to physical plants or teachers or the like. Racism was just an overwhelming kind of had an overwhelming kind of impact on our country relative to the perceptions and attitudes of people. And we're still trying to overcome those kinds of attitudes, and it hasn't been easy, but we have certainly realized a considerable amount of progress. almost all of our major cities in the United States now are majority minority. And almost every city would have a different set of circumstances. So it would be difficult to say that we could ascribe certain kinds of conditions to as being causal factors.
Mm-hmm. He was of the opinion that, well, quote from him, "I really believe we could have had an integrated school system if we took it slower."
Well, I don't think history with research would prove that to be a kind of I don't think that more time would have done it any better.
I guess it's feeling, well, obviously.
I mean, yeah. I was not here, so I can't really speak to that. But in any case, Atlanta was in the courts 25 years before, or 73, and I don't know how much longer we could have waited, especially after 1954, the Brown paper. Atlanta would be just caught up in the wave of action throughout the country. I mean, just couldn't stop that kind of thing.
You think there was no way of stopping the white flight, basically, because of the
right. We have tried desperately. We've had whites to go out to attempting to recruit other whites, knowing full well that we need to build into that kind of program all the kind of trust factors that we could possibly put into such a program. And there was, just as I indicated, such a negative perception of any institution which is majority black.
So basically the racism that you're dealing with.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this. What would you have done differently had you been here 10 years earlier as superintendent of the schools?
I wouldn't even conjecture on that. Is that it is a human business. It's very difficult to say that you would have had to kind of play it by ear or alike, but I just like to think that I was very fortunate to live during this time, to have been part of this kind of social change that we have observed in the country. We have a long way to go yet, but we certainly have accomplished just a tremendous amount in one generation.
I guess the line I'm sort of moving along is really whether what was done during the 60s was more of an impediment to really desegregating the schools, whether there was any real commitment to doing that or not.
I would argue against that. As I said, growing up as I did this generation, seeing all of those kinds of changes, I don't know that it would happen any differently. I don't think it could have happened differently. It was one of those kinds of things which that idea whose time had come. And look at it now. I mean, it's old news. I mean, people don't pay much attention to it anymore. Integration does not kindle that kind of emotional fervor that we felt from those.
Except in the cab, and they're certainly kindling a little bit of
Well, in the courts, but I mean, you don't see people marching up and down. People who were willing to lose their lives and give of themselves in such a total way. I haven't seen that since the 60s.
It was a different period.
Yes.
Let me give one of your quotes from November 73. You said that white flight can be slowed if we can clearly demonstrate excellence in our school programs. You still connected with that?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Was there an effort to upgrade schools in racially transitional neighborhoods?
There was an effort to raise standards and quality in all of our schools. And that is, we did nothing really special in those schools other than the fact that we started our magnet programs in those schools. But what we have done is that systematically we have established magnet programs in all of our high schools. We like to think that every high school will think of itself as being number one in, at something.
But the magnet schools were started before,
beginning with the North Side.
Was it started before you came in as superintendent? Was that started with you? Well, there's one thing I guess that could have been done earlier that might have been very helpful.
Well, if it had gone that way, maybe at that time, it may have been perceived very differently. It was on the North Side, of course. It was just a natural with Billy Densmore and the performing arts. But then subsequently, we went to North Fulton, we've gone to Grady, but beyond that, we just expanded the magnet program on a comprehensive basis.
The reason I ask is that about mid-60s, Southwest High School was, I guess, going through a racial transition. Cascade High Series Graduation Division. And there was an organization called SWAP at that time that was trying to maintain integrated community. And one of their points, I spoke to Fernanda Clayton, who was active in that organization at the time, and she said that the perception was that the Board of Education was not interested in maintaining a high quality for that school, trying to keep the whites in. And in a sense, they helped. They encourage white flight by not upgrading the school to the levels of environment the white would want. That's why I was curious about schools in transitional neighborhoods, which are really key schools.
On my arrival, the people at Southwest High School, their concern at that particular time was that they had an inferior instructional plan. Kids were climbing over one another there, and I guess I was in town one week and I had a Sunday meeting over there lasting 3 to 5 hours, and they were truly concerned about the quality of the program, and but we're right there, but there was no hope of desegregating that particular school because it had already become majority black.
But before that, apparently, the whites had, there was about a 3-year period where the whites had stayed in the community.
I really can't speak to
that. Yeah, I know. I'm just saying in terms of,
sure,
of how to deal with transitional neighborhood schools.
But again, my experience in large cities, despite the quality of magnet programs, on a residential basis, people were still late. Milwaukee's confronting that right now. I mean, you couldn't have a better magnet program than Milwaukee. And they're, at this point, continuing to decline in white population in the city.
So what you're saying is that no matter what was done, magnet or anything else, the white flag was still going on.
You have to deal with the attitudes and values of people.
Yeah.
And you can't legislate those kinds of changes.
Do you subscribe to this tipping point philosophy at all? 70-30, for example?
We haven't. We have tried to go for parity at 50-50. And thus far, we have done fairly well. And when you consider that we have so few whites, that that's a significant accomplishment.
I guess, you know, again, 60s was just a crucial decade to keep an integrated school system or a desegregated school system.
But you see what's happening demographically, and I guess that's a phase one, but as we begin to look at phase two, the move to the suburbs on the part of young black professionals, which could not have, and which would provide eventually for a greater degree of natural desegregation on a residential basis, which is far more acceptable to most people. It could not have happened if we had not had the foundation stone of the 60s and the dramatic changes in the life which took place.
What were your feelings on cross-county or metro desegregation? Think that would have been workable?
I hate to be cynical about it, but what I long recommended, that education is a function of the state, and that we ought to consider desegregation as one of our top priorities. And we ought to order school district boundaries on the basis of desegregation as one of the primary criteria for our organizing school district boundaries. What we have done historically was that we would start with the cities, and we started with the cities, and then as the cities became desegregated, then we would add, say, that adjoining county or that group, and so that it kind of grew on an osmotic basis, and therefore the effectiveness of desegregation was attenuated because there were places to fly to.
Right.
And if we had really been serious and said, hey, this is the law of the land, and that we're going to really look at desegregation, and school district boundaries are not sacred, and that we're going to redraw them just as we do congressional boundaries and the like, every 10 years or so, that if we did school district boundaries in that manner, we perhaps could have contained some of it
over the countries. Yeah, I think so too.
But Atlanta, for the most part, bore the burden of desegregation alone for most of its years. The counties were all the three of them.
Well, there was a suit, I think, an ACLU suit, I think.
Yeah, but
I guess it never got any place.
Yeah. I mean, not only in money, but in emotional anguish and like. And the thing that I still saw coming out of that, which I felt to be extremely positive, hear so few people speak to, there was a kind of psychological freedom for kids in the system, despite the fact that it had resegregated, in the sense that the entire city was, for the first time, open to them relative to whatever resources which were there. In the long term, that's not enough. But initially, there was some degree of exaltation that I can go anywhere in the city and you utilize the resources which are available.
Maybe for the first time, the administration was on their side in terms of opening up the city.
Well, all I can say is, as coming here as an experienced administrator, I express commendation for professional skills of my predecessor relative to school finances and relative to school plan, equipment and supplies and the like. This school system was at least the one which I inherited, was not an impoverished school system. And great effort was being made to improve the instructional program. But there again is part of the price you pay for social change. All of the energy of the school system was given to the litigation. Right? And my major task in my tenure has been to switch that from that perspective to focusing on the instructional needs of the students. And I've had many civil rights folks come to me and say, hey, you're responsible for the next step, phase of desegregation. And I've always responded, that's your job. My job is the stewardship to these kids who are here right now. And I can't do both of those things well. And it's that kind of paradox and dilemma that you're always confronting because of the expectations that people have had relative to the social change. But it's that kind of regular kind of stewardship that I guess gets caught up in all of those kinds of problems and concerns, and somehow that you have to maintain that kind of vision of what is your job.
So, but your job of school excellence stuff, I mean, I can understand that. In relation to that, what you just said, do you think the desegregation battles and the time and effort spent on maintaining segregation in the 60s had an effect on the quality of the school system general plan? Was attention turned from improving quality to resisting integration too much?
Well, let me react to that a little bit. First of all, because of the 60s, and especially in with school desegregation, which was the core of, or the hub of the social changes which took place in this country, we became a better democracy. And it's a kind of almost like a second coming. Maybe for the first time that we could say that we became a democratic republic. Women voted, blacks voted, everybody could kind of participate. And then, so in the last 25 years or so, that we're really beginning to build this nation on a fully democratic basis. That was worth the pain and the suffering which we underwent during the 60s and 70s. As I frequently tell students in the school system, that by virtue of my being here, that my reality exceeds my dreams. There is no interval of my coming up could I even think of myself as being superintendent of Atlanta Public Schools. But at the same time, that kind of reality is now accessible to all of our kids. And that's a new reality for the United States. And I'm proud, and I just feel it's just such a marvelous development. And I've seen that in my lifetime. I've just recently returned from Eastern Europe, and when they talk about democratizing some of the socialist states, you can see the drama and the differences. And we've achieved a great deal in our nation, but at the same time, when we look at the world's economy and how and the technology which your institution represents and the like, we've got lots to do.
Oh yeah.
And it's, but
we would be in a very difficult state if, in confronting those new kinds of problems of the 21st century, if we had not had the 60s. We couldn't do it.
But we were in bad shape before then, as far as not
in the period of manufacturing and industrialization and the like, we almost needed the kind of social order which we had. Somebody had to do the dirty stuff. But currently, we can't afford that kind of social system.
No, I think even a lot of white conservatives in the South began to realize that eventually it was time to give it up.
Oh, the South is a very different kind of place. Now, despite all the racism that still exists here, I frequently tell my friends in the North I'd come up South. Because it's far more subtle and what have you, but in Atlanta particular, that it is, when they say that this is a place that works, I mean, that's really true.
Compared to the Chicago,
that's
doesn't work at all.
Exactly, and I was born and raised there.
Yeah.
When you go to the community saying that your kids are in need, and this past year, for instance, we dedicated one meal for the purpose of introducing technology into our school system on an annual basis. Business community supports that. It's rather than saying, hey, those kids don't need anything. It's a very different kind of world.
But nonetheless, I mean, I agree with all you said in terms of the revolution has to take place, to change. But nonetheless, a lot of the resources of the school system back in the 60s did go into litigation, did go into fighting the segregation battle.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And I guess the most expensive facet of that is that the energy and the thoughts of people, I mean, they were consumed by the litigation.
Which had to hurt the school system.
Yes, absolutely.
Did you have any indication when you came into superintendent's job that there had been an effort in the 60s or early 70s to push blacks into vocational courses or to limit curriculum in black schools?
I saw some evidence of that, at least I heard from people. I didn't see that per se relative to the school system itself, but I had a number of people who tell me that had taken place, and certainly I heard a great deal of it relative to the differences in the way blacks were treated as opposed to whites relative to promotional opportunities and so forth.
Did you make an effort, or was there a need to make an effort to upgrade the curriculum in majority black schools at these levels?
The curriculum was uniform.
Okay.
In the school system.
So in other words, I guess then under Letson, the curriculum had.
He was a good instructional person.
So in other words, in terms of pushing blacks into vocational courses or downgrading that curriculum, that you're talking about really the 1950s when that probably would have happened.
I really can't speak to that, but
yeah.
We had a uniform curriculum, and he was really a very strong instructional person.
Yeah. How about...
I should have said he is.
yeah, he's still around. the impact of some of the other techniques you use, pairing, rezoning schools, closing certain schools, transferring students, how effective is that?
Again, we had so few. We had three pairing situations, all of which suffered from the lack of pupil populations. And just really, they were never as effective as we would want them to be.
Did you find pairing at that point also led to white fight the majority white and the majority black school paired?
I don't think that those were causal factors. I mean, people felt that, again, they felt they weren't getting their full full share of instructional support. You know, like, people populations were so small. So we had fewer teachers, therefore they had more mixed grade classes and things of that sort.
How about the closing of some schools?
That was brutal. During my tenure, we had closed 52 schools. And I had frequently stated I was 6'2" when I came here, and I just clubbed in that regard. That, again, was an imperative of the time. Thank God we're beginning to grow again.
What was the basis of closing the schools?
People population.
Were they built in the wrong places initially, do you think?
I think, like anything, they were built in the right places for the populations which existed at that time. For whatever reason, people think that schools should last forever. And that, I think, is a misperception, is that we need to build schools for about 25 or 30 years and then tear them down. And things change.
The reason I asked that, because I was talking to Clarence Coleman, and he has said that right after the 54 decision, there was a very big effort by the whites in town, the Board of Education, to throw together schools for blacks when the blacks began moving in the direction of the white school. In other words, to avoid integration, the so-called Supreme Court schools, which were all over the place. Those are the schools that apparently became are needed later on.
No, that's not quite the case.
Okay. Well,
the schools which we closed first were located primarily and predominantly white communities. Just the whites that come. And we closed them. And on the entire north side, for instance, we only have three high schools. North Side, North Fulton, and Brady. We closed everything else. And it was, the populations remained level in the southwest section of the city. That continued to grow. But blacks correlated quite in that regard during the last decade, by having fewer children, especially those whose incomes increase over time, their populations began to decline, and then when we started going in closing those schools, then it was perceived that they were being maltreated because we had already closed the schools over on the north section of the city.
Well, I guess there was a part of the white flight, too.
What is this white flight over here? Yeah. Over here, it's really the result of just lower birth rates.
Okay, but rezoning schools like Brady then and some of the other ones, that was an effort then to bring blacks and whites together in the various remaining schools.
Well, actually, it wasn't that so much from zoning. Their zone lines have remained fairly well the same, but rather the desegregation took place on the voluntary transfer basis. I mean, there weren't significant zone changes. Zone changes were only made in order to enlarge the catchment area because we had fewer students.
But it's also geographic zoning not based on racial factors.
Yeah, that's right.
So
like when we closed O'Keefe, that expanded Brady's zone.
I guess my feeling, going back to the 60s, if there had been the redrawing of geographic zones not based on race, if there had been magnet schools and more efforts to pair, rather than this grade a year plan they played around for a while, I think you might have seen some white flight anyway. But I think you would have seen less of it.
Well, I would not be so sanguine about that. if you did not have the kind of comprehensive planning, I mean, on large regional areas, where it's that something is going to happen to support desegregation. For all given purposes, as it related to schools, evangelists, we give that out. Similarly, they just kind of build a wall around. And then later on, I think the business community and other people came back to say, hey, we can't do that.
Can't do what?
We can't give it up. I mean, we need it, and we're going to have to help protect it. I mean, that they have a vested interest in what happens to kids in the city. But during that immediate period, you say, we can't change these events and the tide of events, and they're going to happen.
I guess I just don't feel that White Park was inevitable. I mean, obviously some of it.
Well, again, all I can do is just relate it to what has taken place throughout the country. And I know good people have done everything they knew to do, and every possible strategy. And it has not stopped or stemmed the tide of people leaving major cities. And the only places where that seemed to have worked is when it had been much more of a voluntary nature, and where you had some natural desegregation, and that's been post-60. Kind of attitudes and the like that people have taken on, and there's a greater tolerance.
I suppose, I guess residential areas have changed, and again, as you said, that's a more acceptable way of distributing schools, and people would be able to do
it. Well, it's, well, but that could not have been possible if the kind of traumatic shift and change which took place during the 60s, if that had not occurred. I mean, today, when I first came to Atlanta, and no one lived out in Marietta, but, I mean, blacks just didn't live there. Yeah, that's... It's a very commonplace kind of thing. I mean, and what is it? I think they have a black city council in Marietta and the like. And, I mean, there is just a difference as it relates to how people can accept those kinds of changes and how they can accept people. But it would not have been possible without the difficult times which most communities have confronted. What has happened throughout the state, and there's still a good deal of conservative feelings about all kinds of social mixtures, but I was really surprised at the number of the State Education Commission, when we went about the state conducting hearings on kindergarten. And, you would think everybody would want their child to have a kindergarten experience, but that wasn't quite the case. And in some ways, that was related to the feeling that children may come in contact with other children, both socially and racially, at early ages, and that something would happen to them. But thank God, I mean, we have seen dramatic changes.
Has the white population, student population, stabilized pretty much?
It has slipped a little bit, but there again, it's more of a factor to the disparities in the birth rate at this point than with children. We're, in some places, we're beginning to see M10.
How was the M10 program work in terms of getting whites into majority black schools?
We have not had much of that, as you can imagine. Despite the fact that like the quality of May Science School and the science program, we have a few whites to apply for that particular school. And it's that's encouraging, but not to any significant degree that you would think that you have a trend.
I guess one of the answers there is centrally located high schools with magnet school approaches to them, I suppose.
Well, I would not in any way want to suggest that we shouldn't keep on trying and finding different and better ways of doing it. And as we begin to think about how we're going to really productively utilize technology, we also ought to think of some of the kinds of value concerns, such as desegregation and other kinds of matters, because if there's one area in which we have slipped dramatically is in the whole area of community values and family values and the like. And albeit that we're running like crazy trying to make certain that we use technology well, and that we also are going to have to think through the high-touch kinds of concerns that that I think that in many respects that children need far more desperately than some of these technical skills.
Well, as a historian teaching in technology school, I feel that a lot. One last question. Did you find much resistance to yourself within the new bureaucracy when you first arrived?
Well, it's like anything else that you have to earn your way. It took me almost 2 years before everybody fully accorded leadership to me. But for the most part, everybody wanted to make my superintendency work.
You didn't find any racial animosity?
No. It's like any other leadership responsibility. I had a few assassins who I had to keep my eye on. But other than that, I think people at the time of my coming, they were so desirous of getting the school system stabilized and so hopeful that we would not experience any kind of violence or major disturbances. They were willing and ready to do anything that they could do in order to obtain those ends. The mission at that particular time, when I was interviewed, I asked the board what they felt my major task to be. And almost going around the table, each board member successfully desegregated the system. They didn't speak to instruction excellence at that particular time. And I think the board represented many people in the community. They were so concerned that there could be some possible violent situations in the school system. As I indicated earlier, that we had a relatively easy situation relative relatively in comparison to many other school systems. And it went off almost without a hitch.
Yeah, I think it was a good experience in general.
Atlanta has been a good experience.
Atlanta is a little different than other cities, I suppose.